Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation. Folks, before I ask my friend James to say something, I'd like to say something about him. James Arthur Jonchick, otherwise known as the Black Knight of radio. He's also a modern knight of the road. He's a member of a fraternity that keeps this country moving. I'm proud to say that I was a member of the same fraternity for about 3 years. I trucked over the road with Covenant Transport and Schneider and another small company, and I'm proud to have you on. James interviewed me years ago on Feet to the Fire, and proud to introduce you to James Arthur Jonchick. Say hello. Yeah,
thank you, and thank you for having me on. Yeah, I'm just coming back from holding a load of steel, so I'm still driving, but I'm almost at my destination, so in case we do lose connection, you can just give me a ring back.
Well, that's cool. That's cool. So you're hauling steel, huh?
Well, it's aluminum, steel. It's very specialized. It's really kind of a high-tech milled strips that they use inside of dual-pane glass windows, you know, replacement windows and all that.
Mm, yep.
They have to be perfectly flat, otherwise the glass will crack and all that. And so this company that I hold exclusively for, they had this make this real high precision steel used to put in between windows. In fact, probably most windows made have those little steel separators in the middle of the windows.
Well, you and I kind of have a passion in common, and I think I don't know when you started looking into this, but I started looking into this. I kind of started studying the Torah a little bit a few years back, and especially I read a book by Tony Bushby called The Bible Fraud, and I know you're going to have some interesting things to say. I don't want to steal any of your thunder, as if I could. But tell us what you found out in your travels and in your reading.
Well, actually, I started out doing my show, I'm in my 10th year now, and really the skills that I brought to the show for finding truth via the lack of contradiction started from studying the Bible. I was in a pretty fundamental church, and I had just committed myself to Jesus Christ. And so I started digging into the Bible. I mean, I've always believed all my life, but it was like there was this step I made where I said, okay, I'm going to dedicate myself to studying what Jesus said and emulating him and doing it and so on. And this was back in, the early 90s, maybe. And so I studied the Bible. And one thing that's pretty interesting, I think, if you actually study the Bible as opposed to reading material that's written by the various church affiliations one might be involved in, and get back into the Greek and Hebrew behind it, I don't have to mean be a scholar, but get scholarly books,
mm-hmm.
especially ones that have been written over time, 100 years old, 50 years old, and try to understand what the Greek and Hebrew words mean, and then the context they were in, any kind of idioms and so forth, you get a much richer understanding of the words. And what I found out was a lot of times they didn't match up to what I was being told. So I
mm-hmm.
spent hours with my pastor. I would go to church 3 days a week. I would spend 2 to 3 hours after each service with him, God bless him, picking his brain because I was doing all this studying. And then I started to teach adult Sunday school class, and I asked the pastor that my only request would be that I don't use any Sunday school material, but I use the Bible itself, and that he could review the work and if he wanted to and so on. And that's what really got me into the studying. And then the fast forward till today, I've come up with a lot of conclusions that, it says the truth will set you free. If you believe that, then you look for the truth, regardless of how uncomfortable it might be, regardless if people agree with you or not. And then eventually you start seeing bit by bit by bit, and then the true picture kind of jumps out. And so really the first thing I would say to anybody is that you really have to know where the Bible came from, how it came about.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend reading people like Bart Ehrman, who has an edge. Has an
absolutely.
Edge.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got everything he ever produced.
Because he was a fundamentalist. He went to the liberal schools to try and, tell them a thing or two, and it was the other way around. So then he got kind of, I think he's got kind of an edge, and he may be a little axe to grind, but he does great scholarly work, and he says it, gives it so that the layperson, like myself, could really learn a lot. But, of course, I knew a lot of that before I got those books anyway, because I had a buddy who was really studying into this stuff and did a lot of talking. But, one of the problems with is there's if you get into the fundamental side of the spectrum, you have the belief that every single word in the Bible God literally wrote and it's been preserved intact perfectly from the beginning, it's just not true. The truths are there, the principles are there, preserved in spite of man many times, but because there's an agenda to this, though. The agenda is because the actual Christian church doctrine really comes from Paul, not from Jesus.
Yep.
And, of course, people go, wait a minute, well, Paul's a disciple of Jesus. Well, Paul never spoke to Jesus except in an account where he was struck blind.
Yep.
And Jesus said a couple of lines to him, And it's kind of ambiguous after that as far as how he was taught. But writings both in the Bible and contemporary writings at a time found in the Essene caves, for example, have Paul at odds with the disciples many times.
Yep.
So one of my big revelations now, I mean, as I sit now looking back to my studies, is that the modern church is really a Pauline church, not a Christian church.
Mm-hmm. It's called Pauline Christology is the official name.
And one might say, well, wait a minute. I mean, is there a difference between the two? And that's where I think it's kind of startling if you read just Jesus' words in the Gospels, just his words, and pretend you know nothing else, just Jesus' words, and put together a theology from it. And if you can do that, of course, this is an intellectual exercise. It would be hard to do. And then compare it with a Pauline theology, that's when I think people will really go, whoa.
Mm-hmm. Well, then there's a whole, I don't know if you ever heard of James Parks, but he wrote, now this man was an Anglican priest. Back in the 30s, he wrote a book called Conflict of the Church and the Synagogue. And it's about the Israel replacement. It's about the overlay that the Christian churches have done to kind of replace Israel. And that's an excellent book. And the Peshitta text. But go ahead. I don't want to get out in front of you.
That's a human invention of latter years.
Mm-hmm.
Because another great book I'd recommend, which really helped a lot of my own personal stuff, which I had, and then I read this book, and I went, it helped me solidify it, was The Holy Virus by Lionel Parkinson. In fact, I recommend him as a guest. He's a real nice guy, and it's an incredible book that explains that the Jewish writings, the Old Testament, was corrupted by their stay in Babylon, and that many of the blood traditions in the Bible are actually Babylonian. And you can find them in the Babylonian writings themselves. Passover, for one, is a Babylonian tradition. And so the Christian church says that, well, the Hebrews introduced these and the Babylonians took them. But I think that's a nice way, that's a nice little neat package. But I think in reality, the Babylonians, since they were the captors, the Hebrews were the slaves, they slayed most of the Hebrews. There's only a handful were taken back to, a few thousand were taken back to Babylon, and they were indoctrinated with Babylonian texts. You have people like Ezra reading from the Torah. No one understood the language. And so he translated for the people, and it called for all these blood sacrifices, which the people were stunned that they haven't done it for years, and they went out and had a massive blood sacrifice. So, and I bring this up only because what I think Jesus was doing was he was straightening out the current theology at the time, the contemporary theology, getting it back to what it really was. This is why he would say phrases like, you have heard it written that X, Y, Z, but I say to you, because the actual spirit meaning, the principle, was corrupted by this stay in Babylon. So that if you take the whole blood sacrifice out of the Christian church, you're going to have everyone domination you can think of, whether it be Jehovah's Witness, Baptist, Catholic, Mormon. They're going to be like, no, wait a minute. The central pillar of the Christian church is the blood sacrifice of Jesus. So Lionel put up a $10,000 challenge for anybody to take the four Gospels and show where Jesus actually talks about the blood sacrifice.
Especially since it was outlawed at Isaac. That's something the Jews would point out.
Yeah, so anyway, the people who were running the Jewish religion at the time, the Pharisees and whatnot, they were all you know, they weren't from of the faith. I'd like to say they're probably psychopathic. I don't have any, you know, evidence of that other than they like to, you know, kill animals and had all these type of rituals that are pretty, if you really look at them, the Christian church today can wash their hands from them and go, well, that was changed by the blood of Jesus. I said, yeah, but this is what you're saying God is saying, that you're going to, like, rip out the guts of the animal and then off-burn this one, and then that's turned on Jesus, the Son of God, had to be murdered so that we can, you know, anyway, I don't want to get into sidetrack
with
that.
Yeah.
If one accepts a Pauline theology and a Christian theology, or a Christian, I guess, I try to separate the word.
Mm-hmm.
What does Jesus teach? You know, and the gospel that's taught in the most fundamental to the most liberal churches aren't what Jesus taught. I should say, it's not what Jesus taught.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look, Nation. Now that's pretty evident once you actually, you know, cross that divide and start taking a look at it. But yeah, you're right. You know, the way they wrote their Hebrew changed when they came back, and a lot of things changed. And I've heard it said that the temple priesthood was taken over. When the Romans took over control of commerce in the Levant about 100 years before Jesus was born, it said that men that weren't of the proper priesthood, you know, took over the temple. And things definitely changed. And then you've got the split between the northern and the southern kingdom, and which is a whole other story.
I primarily, not to disregard any of that, but since we're talking about, there's the arguments come up with whether or not it's a literal six-day creation or not, et cetera. Those are all going to just simply get everybody to quagmire.
Yeah.
So what I've kind of focused my focus on is what did Jesus teach? And what I give as my given is that Jesus actually knew things. I mean, you can prove it by logical deduction and looking for lack of contradictions within his teaching, and it makes all kind of sense. And if you take that picture and look back into the Old Testament, you can find the right teaching. A lot of the prophets had it together. They were warning people, and the prophets said, "Turn from your ways, repent.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be saved." Didn't say about a blood sacrifice, and so you have this invented religion by humans, and now you fast forward into Christianity. Of course, same thing happened. Along the way, you have the Council of Nicaea, you have the growth of the Roman Catholic Church as opposed to the African Christian Church or the Eastern Orthodox, and you have the arguments between them, all these things. That's all political. And you completely lose Jesus' teaching in there. And a good test to see how one's church is when you go to church and the pastor is giving a sermon, how often does the pastor teach directly from Jesus?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when I tested my own church, which is a fundamental Baptist church, the answer was mostly Paul.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's where the structure comes from. And then when people might say, like, you know, I don't even know how to really properly go through this to take a person and expose them to this, might shock them, or they may think I'm a heretic.
That's a huge shock for people.
But it really is good news. When Jesus came to give the good news, the gospel is the Greek word translated good news or glad tidings, is that it's very simple. You don't have to do all these things and do all that. You don't have to be, you have to simply, here, look, love your neighbor as yourself. Love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. You know, and that is the summation of all the laws. That's the principle. And it's a principle that's relative. It's a principle that's based on your heart, how you try and so forth. There's not a certain magic formula to guarantee you in. And that's a whole other thing. The whole concept of hell is a creation. The hell as we know it today is a creation by the latter Christianity, probably influenced by the medieval times. But when you see the word hell in the New Testament, there's two Greek words behind it. One is Hades, which is a Greek translation of the word Sheol, and that means the place of the dead. That's all. There's no good or bad implied. It's just you die and you go to Sheol, or Hades in the Greek. And the other word is Gehenna. And this is the funny part about it, is that the word Gehenna is only used in the Bible, nowhere else anywhere in Greek writings. And so Bible scholars are like, well, what does it mean? We can't look it up. We know what it. And so the best work they did was to figure out that this was somewhat of a slang term based on a commonly known garbage burning area, the Valley of Ben Hinnon, and that somehow got made into a proper, like a noun, Gehenna, and I think should be properly translated as destruction. So that a lot of this, the preaching that Jesus talks about is that your works will be burned up. If they're not righteous works, it'll be burned up. There's the idea. There's the war. And that your life will fall into destruction. When they burn the garbage, it's the end.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't this, and it talks about the lake of fire reserved for the devil and his angels. And I put together, I don't know, I want to call it my own theology. That statement would be too exaggerated, but I put together what I think it all works out to be, in that there will be a separation along the way, but the actual judgment, if you will be on your heart. How, if you help people, if you love people, mm-hmm. if you help neighbors, or as you look at your neighbors as somebody you can manipulate, you can harm, you can hurt, you can steal from for your
mm-hmm.
benefit. And that's the dividing line. And that if somebody, you know, goes into that, and they could be a, it could be the leader of a church, it could be a politician, it could be anybody. Anybody who's in a position of power and authority who uses you to get their goal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a husband and a wife, or wife and a husband. It could be anybody. That's the real teaching that Jesus brought. He gave many, many parables of examples of what would be the Good Samaritan, for example, is one of them. That these parables actually give examples of what is the good, what is the bad. You know, when they mentioned, well, how many times should I forgive my brother? 7 times. And the response was 7 times 7. Now, there's actually people out there who believe you should forgive somebody 49 times. You know, and what that speaks of would be the number 7 being a perfection, kind of a, that's another thing. The numbers we have in the Bible are more symbols than actual real numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They have a word quality to them, 7 being a perfection, for example. So, you know, it's like 7, so when Peter, I think it was saying about should I forgive him 7 times, meaning should I do this perfect type of patience and wait 7 times, and Jesus is saying 7 times 7. You know, when you walk, when they take your shirt, give them your cloak as well. They want you to walk 1 mile, walk
mm-hmm.
2. These are the examples to follow about how to live, you know, a life that will benefit your soul, benefit your relationship with God, so that when you do pass on, you will be in the same vibratory frame.
Exactly.
Same, you know, same energy. I mean, there's a lot of these.
You won't be ashamed to be around the nice people.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, right. And it's not that you're going to be either wonderful or bad, or it's that. It's like somebody going to a classical music concert. If they don't appreciate classical music when they go there, it's going to be discord and it's going to be confusion. And it's going to be. So if somebody appreciates offering somebody help, and they appreciate giving of themselves for the helping of others,
mm-hmm.
that energy, that kind of predisposition to action will resonate with that area, and that those who want to look at someone as far as something they can rape or pillage, they will go on to that energy that they will look at. I mean, they might even look at it as a welcome challenge, for that matter. And so that's how I've redefined my versions of the afterlife. Instead of going heaven or hell, I think the phraseology that Jesus used, being one who is predisposed for the positive polarity, I like to call it, is going to look at the negative polarity and describe it in terms. If you go to hell, you're going to be raped and pillaged on a scale well beyond what Earth can do. And if you're, you know, if you are from looking at it from a positive perspective, boy, that's a place I don't want to go. Or if you're like some kind of evil psychopath, you might want to go there.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go down there and I'll take it over. I'll become the main dude or whatever.
Did you ever see that Albert Brooks movie called Defending Your Life?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you got to watch that sometime. Albert Brooks buys a new car and he's got his DVDs on the seat, and they slip onto the floor, and he reaches down, and he runs head on into a bus, and finds himself dead in a place called Judgment City, and Rip Torn is his advocate, and he's going to have to defend his life, and they have to take a look at 5 days of his life. And anyway, Albert Brooks is asking, well, is there a hell? Reptor says, "No, there's no hell, but I hear L.A.'s pretty close, you know." But yeah, so I'm with you. Yeah, you're right. Jesus, you know, he kind of pointed toward the garbage dump Gehenna, you know, where they had fires there. Now it's a beautiful place, back then it was the place where lepers hung out and outcasts and you know, there's a book called The Path of a Righteous Gentile, and it's written for people that are interested in the laws of Noah. And they point out that the Jews never taught that there was any kind of permanent place of detention like the Christian version of hell, and they never taught the idea of original sin and those kind of things. And that's the reason why I kind of started looking into Torah, because the impression Jesus gave was is he was a Torah observant. He says I kept every jot and tittle, and those jots and tittles, those are little fly specks on the Babylonian version of the Hebrew writing. And but he spent 40 days out in the wilderness in vision quest, and you know, he knew. He was like all the prophets. See, the prophets always told the people that they were wrong.
Yeah,
so,
well, are you hearing a beep?
No.
Okay, so because it is beeping, but I'm almost done here, and I can be in my car, and I can talk on the phone, and it won't be so loud.
Oh, that's it. Well, if we lose you, we'll call you back in a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'll edit out the silence. Folks, if we do lose James, what we'll do is I'll play Johnny Cash's When the Man Comes Around till we can reconnect with James.
Yeah, okay, that's good. This headset has been working beautifully, but all of a sudden it's messed up. I put in a battery in and it didn't help.
Yeah. It's a 4.5 minute song. That'll give you time to transition. But yeah, you're right. And you know, and I think people are starting to take a look, you know, you go to church and, you know, people disappoint you and I was in the LDS church in active. I was still on the rolls, they distanced themselves from their earliest founders. And actually, Joseph Smith was trying to get people interested in Native American spirituality. That's provable. And there was so much that went on in the early church, and you know, some of it good, some of it bad. But it just, every church seems to lose its way. I've heard it said that religions, every movement becomes a racket and eventually becomes organized crime, you know, if you will.
Yeah, well, what happens is it starts out as a spiritual thing,
yep.
And then it evolves into the ego. And then the psychopaths will rise to the position of power. The best place for a psychopath is going to be like a priest or a preacher or a, you know, judge or somebody who held in honor, and they can hide behind that cloak and be the wolf in sheep's clothing. And so eventually what happens is you end up having an ego-based situation.
Right.
And you get into power and hierarchy and bossing and, you know, and a lot of the places, like my daughter goes to a real nice place, they do teach a lot about Jesus. And yet there's still this, well, I don't want to be harsh, you know, because who am I? You know, I'm not sitting here like I'm the example to follow, but there is a personal kind of glory in reaching certain goals and doing certain programs. And I was asked by somebody about if I'd be interested in starting a church, and I just about had a heart attack. I said, no way, no how. Because I understand that once you start going into the church like that, it becomes a brain exercise rather than a heart exercise.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pay the bills, you know.
Yeah.
You got to do all this stuff.
You got to tell people smooth things. You got to tickle their ears.
You got to be a politician.
Yep.
You know, and so anyway, but I do. I'm not saying there shouldn't be churches. I'm just saying that it's a hard thing to do because the world will encroach in on you.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim superchargers your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Well, churches are, you know, they're hospitals for sick people, and you know, it's good for the people to meet together, and you know, in the information age, you know, we've got access to histories and texts and things that went on, you know, from 1600 to 2000 years ago, and you know, the real history of the church that's interesting to me is that that period, you know, between the death of Jesus and the 350 years later, when the Romans drove out Jesus' family because they were, James became head of the Sanhedrin. He said, you know, that a few lawless men killed his brother, and you know, there was a split between the Gentile part of the church and the Jewish part of the church, and it was over, well, how do we manage the daily collection that's taken up for the widows? And that's the point where things started to change. And but there was this Hebrew component for a long time, and it was called the branch or the Netzarim. And, you know, 350 years later, the Romans drove Jesus' family, who were the leaders of the church. And then over the next 100 years, they drove out all the original, all the followers that were left, built a pagan temple on the Temple Mount, renamed the city Capitolina. A lot happened that we don't know about. And then you got another, 400 or 500 years until the Nicene Conference, which was literally a riot. They had to call out troops to quell, you know, the fighting. And hey, listen, if you need to change vehicles, just let me know. And
yeah, I'm all right so far. Yeah, the thing about the, if I was to say come up with a fifth gospel, I'd pick the book of James.
Mm-hmm.
Because in James, of course, some scholars don't think James wrote it, and I'm not worried about that too much, because the what's in it is genuine. So, it talks about the true religion is helping widows and orphans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has the principles that Jesus taught, which makes sense, being his brother, or some people say half brother, and being one of the disciples, etc. So you have it makes sense because the principles are there.
Well, in the Old Testament, you know, the widow and the widower and orphans of any age, they're known as the family of God. And I've been in that position. I was homeless for 15 months. And I learned that, you know, the people are just people. You know, it didn't really matter whether they're Christian or a Jew. You know, some are more charitable than others. And people are just people. And I don't care what church you belong to or whatever. I've run into some wonderful people in every religion, and I've run into some real winners too, you know. And
oh yeah.
And but you know, the Christ talked about the wheat being mixed with the tares, and especially so at this time. And that's the way it is. But you know, people become disillusioned. A lot of people join churches and find out everybody's not perfect, but I was privileged to be my first wife. I met, you know, within the first weekend I was in Salt Lake, and we were married about I don't know, 2-3 months later, and she taught me how to walk in the Spirit and how to discern the feelings and the leadings and everything. And she passed away in 1995, but it was her, a person who was really connected to Creator, that more than anything saved my bacon.
Oh, that's good.
You sound like you're out walking around.
Yeah, I'm actually cranking up the truck.
I was getting ready to say, yeah, I remember what it feels like based on the way you're breathing. You just popped the kingpin, and you're cranking up your truck, and James got done with taking care of his load. And
yeah, on a vision quest. You know, I read a book by Blackout Speaks.
Mm-hmm.
It's called, and I was all charged up to go on a vision quest. I got a nice pack. I used to go camping in the Boy Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to try and find a place to go, you know, not too far from Chicago. So I used to get a few days off a week. Work straight a few days and then be off a few days. And here it is today. I still got the pack, never used it. Still have my big Bowie knife, you know, the whole thing. Sit there, never used it. I never did it. I can't even tell you why. You know, it's not didn't happen.
Maybe the reason why, one of my first traditional teachers was a guy by the name of Robert Three Eagles Shrewsbury. I met him about the same time that I met Grandfather Rolling Thunder back in 1990. And I kind of lost track of Robert for about 10 years. And when I got back to Utah in 2007, Robert was in the metallurgy business and the treasure hunting business. But in the interim, he had run across a man in Cedar City, Utah, who was a sculptor that was chased out of Mexico. And this man was a Mayan elder. He had written the only book on Mayan astrology ever written in Spanish. Since then, there's been one written in English. But what Robert taught me was that if you really want to do a good vision quest, the first thing you need to do is figure out what your birth date translated to as far as a Mayan birth date. And he says the Mayan year is about 9 months. And he says once you determine what your Mayan birth sign is, the optimum time for you to go on a vision quest, that day that your birthday is going to come up, your Mayan birthday is going to come up the next day, at 6 p.m. that day, you get ready to go out. Then you need to calculate from sundown to what's going to be sun up the next morning, what the center of night is. And then you go out and set up your circle, and you need to have the four colors present. At least you don't even need a fire; you just have a candle burning. But that's what I did. And he said there is another component where you need to really inside yourself, you know, find a place where you need to go. And I've since learned that a man really doesn't need to leave his own house to find out what he's looking for. But, you know, finding a quiet place is important. But I went out and did this this vision quest, and I actually did it sitting in his wife was somewhat of a visionary, and she said, we need to go down and do it near Mona Lake, which is about 50 miles away. And but, you know, it was an industrial area, and there was traffic around, so I just did it in my vehicle. And I just set the things up over on the right side of the floor. And I just kind of relaxed and you know, let my mind drift. But you have to fight sleep. And just as I was going to sleep, I saw it was as if I was sitting in my car back where I was living in Ephraim, Utah. It was as if I was facing east. And the road kind of went up about a half a mile and went around a little bluff. And I saw just before it went around a little bluff, there was what looked like one of those old ranch gates with the two uprights and one cross piece. And there was a vine hanging, you know, down, and it would look like it was draped all over. You couldn't walk through it without going through this vine. I found out later it was called a Jerusalem vine. It had a red trumpet kind of flower. And then I just heard the words, "You have no choice." So I woke up and it startled, and it meant to me, well, I have no choice but to go east. And at that time, you know, things didn't change for me. Let's see, that was August 2007. Well, at that time I was making really good money. But the following leap day, the CEO of the company that I was working as an affiliate with selling herbs, the feds threw a net over him for false advertising and using images that didn't belong to him. And I went from making $5,000 a month to zero overnight. And by the next December, I was homeless.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to drive through the biggest snowstorm in the history of the Northwest in the last 100 years. It took me 5 days to do a 1.5-day trip to Tacoma, where my son was living. And a month later, as I lay down to sleep, I heard this little voice that said, "Your mother has passed away." Not unusual for me to hear these things, but I thought to myself, well, that's BS, because I said, when I got here to Tacoma, I got a new cell phone, I called the rest home in Tennessee, and I gave them, and I said, if something was wrong, you know, they'd call me. Well, 3 months later, you know, my family tracked me down. Well, where have you been? You know, your mother passed away. And I said, yeah, I'll bet I know when. It was the 27th of January. They said, how'd you know? I said, I told them the story. But long story made short, even though I was planning on, you know, staying out in the Intermountain West, the next summer I was on the road and was at a friend's house in Walsenburg, Colorado, and I had a dream. And that I was going to find a wife, and it would be in an area that was wooded, kind of rolling, and there would be lakes with boat docks with still water around. And after the spirit chased me twice back and forth to the East Coast and all over the place, I was just about ready to check into a flop house in Southern Illinois near a friend of mine, and I stopped here in Crossville and where I'd spent Thanksgiving waiting for a small inheritance that I got in December 2009, and I met my wife. And she had just been talking to the Creator the night before and said, hey, you know, I need some help. And, you know, if you're going to send me a husband, you know, he's got to love cats. And that was another thing I saw in the dream, you know, that there would be white cats involved. And, you know, Lake Tansy, if you saw it, you know, there's lakes here with boats. It all came true. But I had no choice but to come back east.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on. The
it's
Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
These kind of things, if you don't pay attention, and if you don't learn the dream language, it helps to understand symbology. It helps to understand. I kind of credit my early interest in music with helping me understand symbolism. Even though I wasn't listening in English class, I learned it. And because there's a language. It has to do with dreams. Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers, and he rose to be the second most powerful man in the world because he knew how to interpret Pharaoh's dream. But, yeah, we can figure out. On this show, whenever we have some downtime, you know, I have callers call in and say, hey, if you want a free Mayan birthday reading, you know, we'll call in and let them know what their Mayan birth sign is and give them instructions. And Robert taught me that my Mayan birth sign was 9-eek. And the next year, I learned that, I had a message that was given to me that I had been up on my website since spring solstice of 1998 about what the weather was going to be like in 2005. And it came true, when I did a little research into what 9-eek was all about, I found out it was a very special Mayan day sign and year. But the day I didn't know till between 1998 and 2007 that the day that I got that word in spring solstice of 98 was the beginning of what was known as the year of 9-eek. And a lot of things happened that year. A lot of sweeping things happened that year. And when we get people on the line and ask them questions about their personality, we read them their information about their Mayan day sign, they'll go, yeah, well, gee, that makes a lot of sense. And, yeah, I'm a lot like that. And it's an interesting I just call it kind of a spiritual technology. But, yeah, it's not too late to go out on Vision Quest, We'll help you do that if that's something you really want to do. We'll help you do it right.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where my headset went out. Is this sound okay?
Yeah, you're fine.
Okay, we're talking on the speaker phone now.
You're fine.
Usually when it goes out, it hangs up, so we were lucky there. But when it's one of those things where I was just going to do it, and it's like life got in the way, and then I wondered, well, maybe it would have been really good for me to have done it, and you know, there seems to be some force of evil, or however you want to say it, that seems to kind of distract you away from what you should be doing. And sometimes people do it with drugs, alcohol, or worldly
right.
living. But other times, people with the best intentions doing a bunch of stuff could do other things which aren't bad, but it keeps you from doing the things that you really need to do. And that's actually what I've been going through now, because I want to do a series of YouTube broadcasts, or whatever you would call them, on this teaching of what Jesus really said, and that in a more, I'm just doing it, we're just kind of sitting around talking today, but a more teaching aspect of it. And boy, I tell you, just one thing after another, just keeping me
Do you remember that movie? You remember Billy Jack, don't you?
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. I one of the first people I met when I started walking the Red Road back in 85 was a lady by the name of Rhea Coons. Rhea was a mixed-blood Cherokee and an educator all her life. And she lived in Salt Lake Valley, but she knew the grandchildren of the man that is credited as being the prophet of the ghost dance. And, of course, the name of the dance was changed. But the kicker is that she knew the Vidoviches. Andy Vidovich was on the cast and crew of the movie Billy Jack. And they showed exactly how the dance of welcome and friendship was to be danced. Let me play 2 minutes of a clip from originalghostdance.com, and you'll remember that sequence during the movie.
The time is now when the Indian will triumph.
He's still in the rapture of the vision. A great Indian holy man, Mulvokar, is speaking through him.
You mean they had holy men like saints?
They sure did, and Mulvokar was one of the greatest. Once even Christ appeared to him.
And the whole spiritual wisdom of the great holy men of the Indian tradition is now what the young people of the world are looking for.
I wonder if I have the guts.
This is crazy, man. You pull that trigger and we'll never get out of here alive.
The young whites, they know there is a supernatural world and a great spirit, and they try to reach the great spirit. They try by drugs. They are made to do this because their religions no longer believe in the other world. Heaven is not out there. The other world is here. The great spirit, Messiah, the Christ, are here in this pit. Your people, my loved ones, there's a thin veil separating us from them. The whites do not know how to reach through that veil. They do not have the belief, and they cannot touch their loved ones or the other spirits.
I could do it. I could kill
them. Yeah, sure you can, but not now, man. Let's get out of here and get some help.
And lastly, you must learn the dance. The dance of friendship and welcome, in which all whites who come to you with open hearts must be taught the dance in the Indian way. Rise up now, and I will teach you the dance exactly as Wovoka has seen it should be done.
Yeah, we'll be back, but not with help. I'm going to get him all by myself.
And if you go to originalghostdance.com, you can see that it's not a round dance. It's a spiral dance, and it moves counterclockwise. And when I showed this to my friend Robert Three Eagles, who's self-taught in physics also, he says, you know what? He says, any physicist will tell you that if that dance is danced on a small hill, with the center of it on a small hill, it actually sends an impulse of energy into outer space. But that's the ghost dance. And that is, see, Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormon religion, was told that there was a choice seer that would be an Indian. And he was actually headed for the Rockies trying to find him when he was called back and murdered shortly thereafter. But yeah. Native American spirituality is something that's completely different. Well, it's like my 11th great grandfather's uncle said. His name was Old Hop, and he said many proposals have been made for the Cherokee to adopt white language and customs and so forth. And he says, we would be much better pleased to see you do these things than to hear you talk about them.
Well, you know, I should have sent you an email with a link so you could have listened. I wrote a song that was inspired by my reading of the Black Elk book. And, the lady who I was dating at the time was part Indian, I think Lakota, and that's, I guess, that's what Black Elk was?
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Yeah, well, she wrote a poem, and I got inspired by the poem, though I only ended up taking one line from it. But I wrote a song, and it's actually the end theme for my Seat the Fire show. Of course, there's only
cool.
a little segment of it. But it's called The Ancient One. And I wanted to have Native American singers on it. And I tried for a year to contact you. Is it called Powwow?
Mm-hmm.
They all get together? Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked with people, and they recommended I go to a place in Chicago. And well, one day I was just, like, frustrated. I said, I need to work. And I basically kind of gave it up to God. I said, okay, you know, I tried here. You know, do your magic. And the next day, in the mail, I got a disc from a software I used to make music. It's called the Acid,
mm-hmm.
Sonic Foundry Acid. And some group put out a complete, authentic Native American singing instruments and whatnot. And I was able to pull out samples that fit perfectly, timing, perfect pitch, the right tones, right in there. And when I first hit the play button, after I arranged it, I just broke out in tears. It was just like, oh, was it wonderful. I mean, that's personally. I'm not saying everybody has to break out in tears when they hear the song, but my own personal journey of it. And so I got a webpage with it up in there. If people want to hear it, intersites.com, it's SITES.com/ my last name, JANCIK. That was the name of the band that I was going to put together, but that got put on hold when doing radio. So I still want to get back to the music. I have so many more songs in my head, but that song's called The Ancient One. And I'd be interested to hear your take on it, because what I wanted to do, I mean, it came from my heart, and one of the requirements on this disc was to not use it frivolously, but reverently. Which I did, and I'd just like to get a Native American take on it.
Well, sure. Yeah, well, as a matter of fact, we're going to have that available here very soon. And because while you've been talking, I downloaded it, and I'm looking at the
Yeah.
Oh. And we'll play it for the folks. Yeah, it's just that easy.
I love the term. What really got me in was the term Wankan Tankan, if I'm saying it right, was
mm-hmm.
father, grandfather. And I thought that was a great way to look
at
a god.
Well, you know, in that book by Neihardt, Black Elk Speaks, you'll notice that when they wanted to invoke the creator, they would say, Well, years ago, I watched a History Channel program about it was called The History of God, and they said that there was one name of God that that any Hebrew could use, and that word was Ahayah, and the Cherokee name for creator is Yohiwah. And what I've learned from hanging around Orthodox Jews and other people that have been through yeshiva is that these are permutations of the name of God, and they're very, very common in Native American circles. Matter of fact, it's amazing how common they are. And we put up a website at AmericanCherokeeAssociation.com that explains the coincidences between Cherokee dress, burial customs, ways of life, and those of the Hebrew. But we've got it. We'll have it ready in just a second here, and let's play your song. I just have another browser and get into a studio, and we'll play. Should Brian here? Almost there. Where are you? Where are you? Well, say something for a minute while I'm looking around in here for
okay.
it.
Well, I think that was probably my shift from being a fundamental Baptist was at that point I was broken because when I went through my life with divorce, I also got thrown out of the church.
Yep.
And you know, it was kind of like this. I was looking into the New Age community at the time, and I was looking outward for more, and it really kind of got to me with the concept of the father-grandfather.
Yeah,
that's how I personally look at God, and it really started after hearing or reading the words. It really that were got me into this. We're all talking about the same creator here. There's not a Baptist God, and everyone else is the devil. We're talking about the God, which is the only God, and that other expressions of worship, I hate to call them religions, are talking to God, and that various of these groups have certain things which are extremely important and authentic that should be used. You know, in other words, you kind of glean from each group and put together to kind of reconstruct a holistic, original expression of worship. Of understanding, of reaching out, of embracing God, which is really inside. That's what a little saying I came up with many years ago was reach for the skies within. And that's kind of when I sign my emails, I say that. I mean, that's kind of the idea that you're actually, when Jesus said, don't look out there for the kingdom of heaven, I say the kingdom of heaven is here. And I think, I can't prove it, but I think when he said that, he was pointing at his heart.
And you know what he said? My sheep know my voice.
Mm-hmm.
They meant it literally. And that's what we try to do on this show is, and the real specialist at it is Grandfather Red Up. This guy's taught maybe 10,000.
I've had him on the show. I've had him on my show a couple of times.
And, well, we're going to roll O Ancient One right now and listen.
Okay.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow, but tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Mm-hmm.
The Red Road is hard to travel in these times, grandson.
Hey, brothers. You all heading to the All Nations?
Yeah.
Cool beans. Cool beans. Me too. What tribe?
We're Sioux. Pine Ridge, South Dakota.
Hey, all right. My great-grandmother's grandmother, well, her aunt, she was one-third Kiowa.
Ah, Kiowa. Strong nation.
Yeah. Hey, could I hitch a ride with you, brothers?
No. No room, man. Towing on a horse.
That's cool, man. Hey, maybe I'll catch you at the powwow.
Wanna be?
Maybe he's trying to be connected.
They stole our land? Nothing more than our sweat lodge?
Their fathers stole our land. Long ago it was said the white man would look on in disbelief as his sons and daughter began to adopt the Indian way, to learn what their fathers didn't understand. Yeah. He's a wannabe. We want to be connected.
Yeah, that's right. Now, that's a clip from the movie Dream Keepers. And, you know, the first thing you'll run across when you try to walk the Red Road, you're going to run across Indians like that kid. Yeah, wannabe. And, you know, the grandfather set him straight. But, James, that was a killer song, man. That was incredibly hip.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, man. My son would, you know, he would dig that. He's like 27. Was that your voice?
Yeah, I actually did everything in there except, of course, the Native American stuff, which was sampled. And then I had a couple of friends from Indianapolis, Ann McWilliams, who's got a bunch of CDs out, and Dave sing the backup on there. But everything else I played and, you know.
Outstanding.
I actually took Dave's drums and I sampled his drums. So that when I came back to Chicago to work on the stuff, I could use his drum sound, which I liked, and then I would be able to program in how I wanted to be played. I'm not a drummer, so I can't physically do it, but I can hear it in my head, and I'm sure a drummer could do a better job. But that's what I had to work with, and so I
excellent. Yeah, there's it's hip. It's an excellent job. You did a great job on that. But, yeah, you know, that prophecy the old man was talking about in that clip, the prophecy was that the grandchildren of the yellow hair or Custer would come to the Indians to be taught. And, you know, in the middle of the 60s, in the middle of the hippie movement, after my teacher Rolling Thunder started spending a lot of time in the Bay Area speaking, and Daganoweta Quetzalcoatl University was at its height, and they just started flowing into Carlin, Nevada, and Rolling Thunder had a piece of ground which is now a fire training center, firefighting training center, but it was called Metatante, and the place just looked like, you know, it was just strewn with wikiups and mobile homes and trailers, but that's where they came to be taught. And my friend, his son, Mala Spotted Eagle, grew up, born in a wikiup, and was raised in one there. And he's now out in Bletchley, Oregon. He has a ceremonial center called Nanish Shante. It's nanish.org. And our Rolling Thunder passed away in January of 97, just after I started putting the prophecies up on they were on the internet. I just put them in one place. But yeah, you did a great job.
Yeah, and that's my actual heart calling is music. And I went down to visit a friend I met through my web work in Mexico City, and I went to the Teotihuacan, if I'm saying it right.
Mm-hmm.
And I got there late, and there was only an hour left, and nobody was in the park at all. And I was all alone by the pyramid of Quetzalcoatl. And I just started, I guess the word would be vibrating. I didn't know how to say it then.
Yeah, there you go.
But I was just, like, shaking inside.
That's when the very first time I went to Creator and said, okay, I've got some questions, and I know I can get an answer to a prayer. I was just sitting on the side of my bed in my basement apartment, and my body, it felt like I was laying on one of those old cheap motel beds, you know, where you put the dime in, and you start vibrating, and that's your spirit raising your vibratory rate so the message can get through.
Yeah, and I think, when I actually did some research on Quetzalcoatl, of course, there's several different aspects depending upon who is telling the story, but it was a Christ figure.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to put a bunch of stuff together. I can't say whether that was Christ actually there, but it was at least a Christ figure. And, you know, again, it was all these pieces. It was a long road. It's probably because I'm dense, but it was a long road of aligning all these things together. So now when I look out, everything makes sense as far as what Jesus taught and the way and the people who are running this world are bloodthirsty psychopaths.
Yeah.
And they have people who have they've been able to manipulate into servitude. Some have, literally went to the dark side, if you will. Some are they're calloused, so they still have a light inside, but there's a callous around them. It's hard to get to it.
Yeah.
And what I'm hoping in these days is that this energy level rises on the planet so that everyone's going to have to make a choice. I mean, if there's any light left in a person, it's going to come to the surface, and they'll either go with it and grow with it on a very accelerated pace, which is a little bumpy, or they will make the choice to turn away from the light, but there won't be anybody left in the middle. It's almost like if you were standing on a piece of pavement and the ground started to raise in a perfect dividing line point, and you had to choose which side to go on. At some point, the climb up the hill is so high that it's past reasonable possibility. And it seems like that drawbridge is being raised now just by the actions of the government doing things that, you know, people in the Nixon era would have blushed to actually think about doing. Now they're openly doing them. You have the people around the world who are being tremendously oppressed, and our government turns out that instead of being the good guys in it, they turn out to be some of the worst guys.
Yeah.
And there is, you know, in fact, I've gotten into discussions on my show when people start talking about the criminal Zionists and Jews and start to point out, I go, look, you can't look at one group of people and think that that is the answer. Everybody has psychopaths in it, whether it be Israel, United States, Arabs, Black.
Oh, yeah.
Jews. And it's really, you have to pull back. And again, I use the yardstick that Jesus taught about how to love and how to act how do you know by their fruits?
Yeah.
Jesus gives an exhaustive look on it. And I'm not saying other people haven't said this, but what I have chosen is, I've chosen Jesus to be my, I don't know if the word be guru, teacher, spiritual master, that he had it together. And to do what he did, basically Jesus goes, you see all this stuff?
When you get into the Torah a little bit, you run across the concept of kinsman-redeemer. You find out that, do you remember a movie made in the 40s called The Ghost of Canterville Castle?
I don't think so.
It was a Charles Lawton Shirley Temple movie, and it was about a bunch of Army Rangers that were billeted at this old castle, the Canterville Castle. And there was a ghost that ran amok there. And he had been walled up in his bedroom by his father because he had been a coward. And until a kinsman redeemer came along that performed an act of bravery, he would not be allowed to leave the earthly plane. And Robert Young, Marcus Welby, he came along and he had the birthmark. And if you ever get a chance, they remade it. It's called The Canterville Ghost. And I didn't realize for many, it was my favorite movie from childhood. I didn't realize until in later life that is, You know, a lot of scripts are written by Jews, and a lot of these concepts are written into it. And if you, but the original concept in Torah is that if your family has been incorrectly believing something for a long time, all it takes is for one descendant to come along and start getting back on the righteous path, and you can redeem the whole family. So all of a sudden when I learned that, I went, oh, wow. Then I understood why my grandfather appeared to me in a dream. It was a couple of years before I realized this, but my grandfather appeared to me in a dream with my dad, and they had both passed. They were both dead. And my grandfather said to me, I wanted you to know how grateful I am. And I should have just shut up. And because right away I said, well, you know, I should be grateful to you. But I figured it out later that because I was correcting my thinking, that it was allowing him to stop stumbling in the spirit world somehow. But that idea of a kinsman redeemer is old Hebrew lore. Plus,
that's big in the LDS church. That's why they have the
They call it baptism for the dead, but the other concept is that in Hebraic concept is that if you have a arrangement with a person, say he's going to die, and if you have an arrangement with that person that he will be your advocate with the Creator after he passes, that person is called a tzaddik.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like
dehydrated.
And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond. Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
T-Z-A-D-I-K. And so, you know, for, you know, let's just say I have a good friend at Torah-Voice.org, and he really believes that Jesus was a world tzaddik, and that's how he explains what Jesus' mission was. And, you know, he's just, and I didn't know until after my first wife passed away, because we had an agreement that she was going to hang around and look in from time to time. And every time some major challenge was going to happen, this happened dozens of times, she shows up. Like the morning I was out and, you know, sleeping at a truck stop. You know that last stop of the western edge of Oklahoma, just before you get into, New Mexico. And I'm sitting out there, and she wakes me up in a dream. She's got this stern look on her face. So I get on the telephone and call my new wife, who was her best friend. And she said, oh, did the company call you? I said, no. I said, I just saw Joanne. What's up? She says, well, She says, Joe, they think, referring to my son Joe, they think Joe had a heart attack over at Job Corps. Come to find out, it was, they learned later that he had atrial fibrillation. But they wanted to do a test on him, and the test had a 30% chance of killing him. They wanted to run a wire back and try to shock his heart back in. And I said, no, absolutely not. And but that's just an example of so I think there's things going on here, transactions between us and the spirit world that maybe Christians don't really understand fully. And I think Tom Laughlin is Billy Jack, you know, kind of was explaining to those people down in that pit that were going to dance a ghost dance, you know, trying to help them understand, you know, some of the way the things work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, you know, my own personal way of looking at it is that there are ways that people can, if it's well deep rooted and well principled in these principles that Jesus taught, for example, that there can be many different ways and still be the narrow road.
Right.
And that depending on culture, for example, people would have this inbred culture and tradition that will help solidify this system. The problem with the Christian church in general, and in particular the whether it be the Anglican, the Baptist, the more
organized.
Yeah, but the more non-spiritually organized. I mean, like for example, Baptists are very brain heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You miss out on a spiritual type thing, and then you get some of the charismatic churches who are heavy on the spiritual, but could use a little brain work at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you can put, and a lot of these old traditions are going to be this way, where they've already worked out these things, and they have a well-oiled tradition that creates literal and real methods and ways to for people to latch on and grow in this life to the next one. I shy away from various religions saying that they're the one true religion.
Right.
On the other hand, there's going to be principles that have to be present.
That's right.
If one is to be true.
Well, when John Paul II was alive, a lot of people don't know this, his mother was a Jew, and he was recognized by the Orthodox rabbis in Jerusalem as a Jew. And he figured out that the Catholics did not need to missionize Jews, that they had a perfectly valid covenant. And at that point, they started bringing, you know, rabbis into a lot of Catholic schools, both sides recognizing that there was a low wall between the two faiths. But they at least started looking at, you know, hey, you know, come let us reason together after 1,600 years of bloodshed.
Yeah, now this all these things are man created, and that's why I kind of go back to what Jesus taught, because if you follow what Jesus taught, none of these things would have happened. In fact, I had an email from a person who was trying to say that in the book of Revelation, John was saying that the Jews were of the synagogue of Satan. And I wrote back to him, and I corrected him and said, it says, those who think they are Jews, but they are not, and they are in the synagogue of Satan. And so what you have is people who are not following the heart and soul of the teachings, but they are calling themselves by name, but are not.
Mm-hmm.
And the synagogue of Satan I took to be, you know, if Satan is an example of someone who is completely earthy and selfish for their own power and growth, that these individuals actually conspire and aid and abet one another to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But it has nothing to do with saying Jews are synagogue of Satan, and yet this is what the belief was. And he responded, well, I'll think about that, you know, which is actually amazing. Most people just would ignore it. But this is why I talk about you have to actually go back and read what it says. Another common error is when people talk about biting the apple of knowledge and that God tried to prevent people from having knowledge, but it was in our nature to get knowledge. I said, no, that's not what he said. It was the choice of inviting the knowledge of good and evil. So if one can look at that text and say, wait a minute, we might have been given as a race a choice. Do you want to actually get into this duality and experience, in a personal, real sense, good and evil? And by biting that apple, well, actually, it's not even apple, it's a fruit. Biting the fruit, the choice was made, whether that be a literal event or a symbolic one. The choice was made to go into a dualistic world of good and evil, and here we are. You know, here we are all, you know. So people argue about that being literal or not. It's like, to me, it's irrelevant, because whether it's literal or not, here's the point, and here we are, and what are we going to do about it? And Jesus talks about how to become to the good side, this is what you do. So every time this is, of course, years of pondering.
Yeah, that's what it takes.
Every time I do this stuff, it keeps coming back to the same consistent message. And if you look at it, Jesus is just about one of the only universally accepted prophets around the world.
Well, you know what the Dalai Lama said? He said, "We own your Jesus." He says, "We call him Isa."
Yeah, Buddha Isa. Yeah.
And he, you know, and he sojourned with us for a while. They've got writings and teachings that the Hopi elders and the Tibetan elders got together years ago, and when the Tibetan elders listened to the Hopi, they were astounded at the prophecies that they kept, and they said, "Oh, we've got lots of cool prophecies too, but we don't read them anymore. We're gonna have to go dig them out, and they were in Sanskrit, and we're gonna have to dust them off and see." And see what they were saying. But they have been getting together, and they have been meeting, and there are meetings of the minds going on this year. It's interesting.
Yeah, one of the things I was studying, I started reading some writings from the what would be the modern Essenes, I guess the word would be. I don't think they have an actual linear connection, but it's people who have embraced their theology. And there were some writings that were turned up in the, 300-400 A.D., maybe a little bit later, that have extra, more Jesus teachings. Now, probably they were written after the fact. Perhaps they were inspired. Maybe not. But what I thought was fascinating is the Essenes really don't like Paul at all.
No.
And if you read the Gospel of Peace, for example, there are stuff, quotes in there attributed to Jesus that Paul said. Now, one thing about Paul is Paul's writings are the earliest verifiable writings about Christianity in any context. And the Gospels didn't show up for another 20 to 30 years. And what I've kind of got a theory on this, or an assertion, that the Pauline theology was very well organized. Paul was very educated, he had connections, very good speaker. Meanwhile, people were keeping the sayings of Jesus. They were keeping them. They did have them. It was word of mouth, maybe some writings. And when at some point, the gospel writer said, well, wait a minute, you know, we really should kind of put down what Jesus said. And so I think the Gospels are kind of, I don't want to say an opposition to Paul, but they're kind of written so that people have a record of what Jesus said rather than what Paul's theology was. So
there's places where, you know, Paul contradicts Jesus. He contradicts the other apostles. There's a place or two where he actually contradicts God.
Yeah,
so there's something lost in translation somehow.
But so I'm thinking that if people were to, I think part of the reasons that the Gospels became written, I mean, most likely the Gospel writers took a number of Jesus' sayings and they reassembled it into a story. They may have added some incidences to support the prophecy of Jesus being the Messiah, etc. Again, I deal with Jesus' words alone, and if you look at what Jesus says, they have been preserved. Some of them are pretty hard sayings. They're not necessarily that pleasant, And so I'm thinking that they didn't have the guts to change what he said, and they put it all in there, and so that the even though these Gospels may be later than Paul's writings, and that they have been passed down from generations, both from memory and from writing, but I think they're relatively accurate as far as the principles taught, because a lot of it's pretty earth-shattering. A lot of it is definitely different from the mainstream culture. It was so, it attracted people. They heard it, and inside, they had that internal resonance of truth. He spoke with authority, not because he was being an egomaniac, but he spoke from such a personal understanding of him. It wasn't just reciting a bunch of text. It was actually living and breathing inside him from understanding.
Well, especially 24th chapter of Matthew. I mean, there's things that he said in there that if you take a look at what's going on today, he made a comment. Well, he made a couple of interesting comments. One was, this isn't 24th Matthew, but at one point he says, I came only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Well, the lost sheep of the house of Israel were the northern kingdom. They left and they went into Asia Minor, and they went up into Europe, and they also went to Afghanistan and India and as far as China. These people became Gentiles. And eventually they were preached to in Asia Minor by Paul. And I think John Paul II realized this, and that, you know, there was no, you know, there's no reason to try to convert Jews. And when Martin Luther was doing his thing, he originally approached the Jews and wanted them to join him, and they said, no, thank you. And at that point, he started writing all kinds of really gosh-awful things about the Jews. And we know what a train wreck that ended in 1945.
Yeah. See, also, the focus, this is what I try not to focus. If I focus on Jews, you're going to focus on, for example,
right,
there is evidence to see that the modern Israeli state, the Zionists, the negative guys, in other words, the bad guys, the bad Jews, if you want to call it. I don't know, I still can't come up with a word for it.
Well, I interviewed Barry Chomish about two, three weeks ago, and he's an insider, and you know, he'll tell you, hey, these people, they're not Torah observant, they're Sabbateans, and they believe
right.
the exact opposite of the Torah.
But these, if you focus in on the Jews, a lot of what has been used from the events of Hitler has been used and manipulated and exaggerated and applied to give a good cover for a guilt cover for people behind it, so that the ADL will go after anybody who tries to go at things. But it's not because they're trying to defend the Jewish race from aggression. They're trying to keep that guilt card. A lot of other people were killed too. And I'm not saying that it was in any way, shape, form not a Holocaust. How many people have to die before you use the word Holocaust, you know? But the point is that we have to get away from the ethnic, religious, genetic arguments and get down to the fruit. You will know them by their fruit.
Yep.
You won't know them by their last name. You won't know them by their tree, where they were born, where they live, who their mother was. You will know them by their actions.
And Jesus said that the certain signs would follow those that believed. And you know, Paul did say, I got to give him credit. He says that he gave two priorities for Christians. And a lot of people, when I ask them, what were the two priorities that Paul gave? And, well, I don't know. I said, number one was to prophesy, and number two was to be charitable. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Hi, friends. This is Will Blue Otter. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason. but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. We keep making laws to try and change human behavior. You can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that position.
You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
Yeah, I don't want to mistake my problem with Paul. Paul wrote some good stuff. I think, unlike other people, I think Paul believed what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't some kind of a power broker or manipulator. I think he really believed what he was doing. I just don't think he was 100% right. I think he was bringing along some pharisaical baggage that he was mixing in with Jesus' teachings, which is unfortunate. But still, one of the most beautiful things I have it printed out was his little soliloquy about love in the Corinthians, that you can do all these great wonders, but if you don't have love, it's nothing to annoy. I mean, that's beautiful.
As a side note, some of these Essene writings attribute that to Jesus, which I thought was kind of interesting.
That, we really don't like know.
Like Paul so bad that they're going to anything that was good to come out of Paul's mouth supposedly came out of Jesus' mouth.
Well, the apostles, the only apostle that ever really embraced Paul was Peter, and only at the end of his life. They really didn't accept him. They were walking the path with their original set of instructions, but Paul, Paul was a Benjamite, and the way Rabbi Michiel Baron he's in Ramat Bet Shemesh, Israel, he explained to me that there are four levels of spirituality in Judaism. He says the bottom level is just your average Israelite. The second level is rabbis, and he says the third level. He says the entire tribe of Benjamin are minor tzaddiks. And he says then you have your really highly elevated soul who are tzaddiks. But Paul had something going on simply because of the fact he was a Benjamite. Benjamin was the only son that was actually born in the land. All the other sons were born up in Syria. And the tribe of Benjamin, what Rabbi Baron told me, in the Bible there's an account of the war of the Benjamites against the other 11 tribes. And the first battle, they just about defeated the other 11 tribes. And they were the smallest tribe. But the Creator turned the tables on them, and Rabbi Baron told me at that point half of them jumped on ships, and Phoenician ships, and they went to places like Scandinavia and Scotland. And he said that when Jacob gave Benjamin his blessing, he blessed him to be a father of a nation and of nations. And there are prophecies about the different tribes of Israel that could not have been fulfilled in any other way other than for them to go and to leave the land and to go in the diaspora someday to return and be regathered in the last days.
See, I don't necessarily accept the modern nation of Israel as really gathering, because it was a secular state put together by the secular people who just had a terribly bloody war. And in fact, a lot of the, if you want to call them, the fascists from Germany came along with that whole package. So, I mean,
they're in exile in their own land until until they what needs to happen. Obadiah was an Edomite, which means he was a descendant of Esau. If you read in Obadiah, he says that if the Esauites and their modern descendants are Palestinians today, he says if they're in Joseph's inheritance, which is the West Bank, he says if they're there when the descendants of Joseph come for their inheritance, they'll be burned to stubble. And I have a friend that in 94 went over to the Holy Land and took this message to the Palestinians, and they accepted it to the point where they warned him the day before the Intifada that it was going to happen. And what needs to be happen, what needs to happen, it basically is what happened in between Pakistan and Israel, where there needs to be a migration. The Esauites, they need to go over and extend Gaza northwards, because that's the lands that they were given by God. And the West Bank doesn't belong to the Jews. It belongs to the 10 so-called lost tribes, which the Orthodox rabbis have known where they are. And but someday, matter of fact, I've got a book right here that I found it on a library shelf up in Lake County, north of Chicago. And it's a book that people read that might be interested in converting to Judaism. And they made it clear in there that the framers of the State of Israel knew that they had no right to use the name Israel because they were Judeans. But they had been waiting for 2,600 years for these people to return, and they never return. And there is a small movement of people that are trying to go back, and they're called non-Jewish Zionists, and it's going to work out somehow. They've got to get separated from the Esauites, and that way they can redeem the land and they can go forward. That's my take on it.
Again, I kind of focus on the actions, and I don't know how much. I mean, I deal with Jesus' teachings.
Sure.
And I don't get a lot of this blood relatives. I mean, one of the sayings Jesus said is, many will come from the east and west to sit at the table with Abraham, and you'll be thrust out.
That's right.
And the Pharisees were using their genetic link to say, well, we're sons of Abraham. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're in. And I think the west and east is referring to people all along the outside of the area, mm-hmm. but on the planet. So I'm kind of like thinking that a lot of the people who are going to be looking at, well, this is my land. Well, this God gave it to me. Well, no, he didn't, and all this stuff is missing the principal point of it. I mean, mm-hmm. for example, if they want your shirt, give them your cloak as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. It might be a vehicle for manipulation by the powers that be, the psychopaths running things, is to feel these fires against people who think they all, you know, they're rightfully given this or that. It could be a tool of manipulation.
Yeah, it's a hot zone. It's but the interesting thing is the prophecies about, you know, oil being discovered, and you know, they've discovered natural gas, and they're real close to discovering oil, and they're down into the same layer that the Saudis are in. They just have not been able to. You can check out Zion's Oil. They're on the NASDAQ, and things are happening. Prophecies are being fulfilled now that have been laying around for, you know, almost 3,000 years.
Well, my offering to the world, for what it's worth, is the refocusing. If you say that you're a Christian, then that means you follow the teachings of Jesus, which means
mm-hmm.
that you should focus on the teachings of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, you'll cut through a lot of the petty arguments between denominations
mm-hmm.
and get down to the bottom line, which is real powerful, too. I mean, it's not taking away anything from Jesus' power as far as helping us now from beyond and all this. It's just that it seems like it's laid out that you have to build this connection with your soul through this noisy region that's involved with your ego and the human animal part. And in order to do that, if you do these good things, these positive things, if you love, that will help build an open bridge to the inside and allow your relationship to God, who is on the inside, to grow. And if we are distracted by things in the world, especially lust, greed, fear, and all that,
mm-hmm.
that breaks off that communication between the inner and the outer. And so Jesus actually gave a physical exercise, a way that you could actually build a bridge by doing actions. I have a saying that thinks that the spirit comes from within to without, and Jesus teaches from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus comes to your head and connects to your heart, and the Holy Spirit works on the inside to bring
mm-hmm.
the heart outside. And that's the 1-2 punch. And Jesus' exercises of, you know, actually doing good and resisting the flesh,
mm-hmm.
and all that is an actual exercise that will build a relationship with God. It's a real action to take and do. It's not theoretical. It's not saying things in Sunday school or at a church. It's not even praying is more powerful than to actually go to your fellow human and resist your ego desire
mm-hmm.
to somehow manipulate them for your benefit, but giving yourself for their benefit, that actually builds from the outside in, the relationship with God. I think that's the gospel in a nutshell. and it has nothing to do with birth, it has nothing to do with words, it has nothing to do with money, it has nothing to do with superficial type of things that you would do that men would go, oh, wow, mm-hmm. that's pretty cool. It has to do with the quiet praying inside, the quiet actions of helping your neighbor, helping your enemy,
mm-hmm.
even stronger than that. That
yeah.
actually is a physical exercise that builds that inside.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Just having charity is so important, and it's hard to love your enemy. It really is. And if you can learn to do that.
You look at your enemy as deluded, and look at your enemy as they're building a wedge between themselves and God, that when we move on to the next level, the stuff they did and harmed you is actually going to be a different vibration. And by forgiving your enemies, you're helping to raise the vibration by not fighting back at them and saying, you know, you're going to get this and you're going to
mm-hmm.
but actually forgiving them, you're actually helping them raise their vibration. And they may resist
mm-hmm.
it, but that, I think, is the goal is to, the martyr is to, you know, Jesus, when he stood before being tried, he could argue his way out. He didn't use his power, his metaphysical power to do things. He literally went along with the program and gave of himself, and because of that, he's helping to raise the world's vibrations.
Yeah.
So we need to do that on our own, in our own perspective, in our own relativistic way.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, our actual actions, rather than going out and having a revolution, is that we should be going out singing songs of love in the street and helping one another.
Mm-hmm.
And that would raise the vibratory level. And if the real evil people won't do it, they'll fry in their own juice, so to speak.
Wicked destroy the wicked. Exactly. Well, we're just about out of time. But, you know, you were talking about, I don't know if I ever told you, I'm an alumnus of Up With People, the singing group.
Oh, yeah,
and,
I've been to a couple of their shows.
And back in this...
70s.
I was in 71 and 2. And ever since that era, all the cast that have gone through the 80s and the 90s and these days, they all go back to this one song that was written. I watched it being written. I watched Paul Caldwell and Herb Allen write it, and we recorded it. And one of the 40 voices that you'll hear in this song, the lead voice was a good friend of mine by the name of, I'll remember here in a second, Willie Knowles. And it's called Where the Roads Come Together. And unless you have something else, I'll close with that song.
No, I appreciate the time being here. And if people are interested in this line of thought, hopefully I'll be working very soon at JesusCalledToChrist.org. And then, of course, there's always the show on Sundays, Feet to the Fire, which this stuff does get talked about here and there, as along with a sprinkling and a spattering of other ideas.
Yeah, folks, it's real terrestrial radio. So, and you can go just go Google Feet to the Fire, and oh man, you can listen to all his past shows for free. I'm sure you'd appreciate a donation because it's free to listen, but it's not free to produce.
Yeah, I may pay for it more later in the future when those choices of passing up pensions and all that stuff may come to bite me in the back. But
yeah,
it's something I had to do. You got to do what you got to do. You're going to die here eventually.
Yeah, yeah. There's
no way out of that one. But
it's called a labor of love. But, well, thanks a lot, James, and we'll be talking.